This episode is brought to you by Atomic Books. Atomic is an independent bookstore full of objects made of paper, vinyl, plastic, and various other actual materials at the edge of time. Specializing in literary comics, small press, art books, and great regional beer at 8 Bar in the back of the store. Come to 3620 Falls Road in Hamden or go to atomicbooks.com. Atomic Books, literary finds for mutated minds.
It's difficult because it's so intangible. It's ineffable. It's ineffable. You can't really put your finger on it, but why does something grab you? Why does something give you chills? I can give myself chills now and then, and that's kind of great fun. And that always leads, it's a sign to me that something I'm doing may be something possibly special.
This is Essential Tremors.
I'm Lee Gardner.
I'm Matt Byers. The idea behind this show is to have musicians and other creators talk about songs that shaped who they are. We're not looking for favorite songs, necessarily. We're also not looking for songs that they'd choose to take with them if they were stranded on a desert island. What we're looking for are songs that have significance to them. Songs that might have changed the course of their creative lives, or their lives in general.
I am a lone mariner, skin, bone, strength low. I am a fair sailor, flesh weak, but spirits ago. Bless my soul. Taking off from the lee shore in search of the big one. An intrepid effort of the soul to battle when the storms and raging seas come. Mama gonna leave it to the fates, to the fates. The goddesses control human destiny and life. One spins the thread of life. One determines its length. One cuts it off, it stops.
Largely a household name among anyone who listened to pop music in the 80s and 90s, pianist and multi-instrumentalist Bruce Hornsby skyrocketed to fame with his 1986 album, put out by his band Bruce Hornsby and the Range, The Way It Is. Also well known for his work as the touring keyboardist for the Grateful Dead from 1990 to 1992, Hornsby played over 100 shows with that band. His new record is one of many examples of his vast knowledge of, and deep love for, musics of all different types and origins. Created with American chamber ensemble Y Music, Deep Sea Vents was released in March of 2024.
Heavens are far more common than winds from...
The first song Hornsby chose as being formative for him was Like a Rolling Stone by Bob Dylan.
Once upon a time you dressed so fine, threw the bumps of dime in your prime. Then you people call, say beware doll, you're bound to fall. You thought they were all kidding you. Everybody that was hanging out, now you don't talk so loud, now you don't seem so proud about having to be scrounging your next.
First one, and I looked it up today. The release date of this record was July 1965, so I was age 10, moving on to be 11 that November. So at 10 years old, I discovered the Red Columbia label single, the 6-minute long single, Like a Rolling Stone by Bob Dylan. And I played it on my little bootleg turntable with a built-in speaker over and over again. Couldn't stop listening to it. I got to the point where I could phrase vocally along with every idiosyncratic phrase of Bob's. And so that's number one. That was a seminal moment for me, and a deep 10-year-old moment. It's amazing to think that at 10 years old, that's what you're allowed to hear. That's what's moving you. So that as I look back on that, that's kind of surprising and great and fun.
Set the scene there. Like you mentioned, how old you were, what kind of kid were you, and what was your home life like? Did your parents buy it for you, or were they just was it something you found on your own? Just a little more detail on that.
Well, Like a Rolling Stone was a number one top 40 chart hit. So we just heard it on the radio. We heard it next to next to Otis Redding records and next to a Herman's Hermits record. Mrs. Brown, You've Got a Lovely Daughter. The stylistic variety of top 40 then was quite something. And so I just heard it like any other kid would hear it, but it just reached out and grabbed me so intensely. I was just in my room driving my parents crazy, probably in the next bedroom.
Do you know what it was? I mean, I know those things are sort of magical when they happen. You're a kid, and especially as a kid, you're not sitting there and thinking, I like this because of this, this, and this. But can you sort of access the emotional experience of it, why it grabbed you?
It's difficult because it's so intangible. It's ineffable. It's ineffable. You can't really put your finger on it, but why does something grab you? Why does something give you chills? I can give myself chills now and then, and that's kind of great fun. And that always leads, it's a sign to me that something I'm doing may be something possibly special. So that, like a Rolling Stone, gave me chills as a 10-year-old. I really can't dissect it. I could try to say, well, maybe it's the chord progression, but it's a simple chord progression. It's just a combination of sounds, maybe the organ, the little piano, bum 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 ba dum bum, that's a great little bit there. So there are a couple things. I guess I could go on. Just the sound of the guitar. The guitar organ sound is always pretty moving to me. I'm a sucker for a Hammond B3.
Mm-hmm. Did it lead you somewhere else? Did it lead you to discover something else that you don't think you would have discovered without this first?
I can't really say that's true, because you asked me what kind of kid I was. At that time, age 10 years old, just like most every white kid in America, when I saw the Beatles on Ed Sullivan, I wanted to play guitar. So I played a little guitar. I started to do that, but mostly I was a little jockey kid, little sports guy at age 10, playing every sport in its season: football, basketball, baseball. That was me at that point. But also way into music, just as a fan.
The second piece of music Hornsby chose as essential to forming his sensibilities was Paprika Plains by Joni Mitchell.
Okay, the second one, moving 12 years in the future, because I looked this up today too. I knew the basic area, but I wanted to know the specifics. Joni Mitchell's record, Don Juan's Reckless Daughter, came out in 1977. It was sort of the spiritual, stylistic sequel to Hajira. Well, there's the 16 minute-long piano and orchestra piece called Paprika Plains. And I just got chills just saying the name. it was always so moving to me and remains so. Just like a Rolling Stone remains so moving to me when I hear it now. These things hold up. So Paprika Plains was sort of singular in Joni's oeuvre and her corpus, her body of work. At least at the time it was, because it was with an orchestra. Mike Gibbs did the orchestration. I loved it so much that I got in touch with Mike Gibbs. I actually called Joni and we had a conversation about this because I said, look, I'm doing some orchestral concerts here. This was in the early, mid-90s. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking to work with Mike Gibbs. Can you give me a little report about him? So that was great fun to hear that. So again, really moving. Joni has her own way of playing chords that's unique to her. I've had my Joni Mitchell chord voicing moments in my music, so that's influenced me now and then. Actually, a new song that I wrote last year is new to me. It has its Joni Mitchell bridge with her, with what I would call her idiosyncratic chord voicings. And yes, Paprika Plains is just a gorgeous piece of music. A lot of people may turn off to the middle part of it because it gets a little dissonant and a little sort of modern classical-esque. A lot of black notes in there. Most people live a white note life, so that might throw them. I was already pretty interested in at the time, mid-late 70s, in modern classical music, Charles Ives and, Samuel Barber, and then later on, Schoenberg, the Second Viennese School, Elliot Carter, Olivier Messiaen, the Musique d'Oiseau. I could keep going on, but that's a different conversation.
So you have a new record coming out, of course, and
yes,
there's not always this direct connection between something that you heard 45 years before or whatever, but I'm curious if there's anything that carried through, even at the most subliminal level, into your current work.
Yes, very astute of you to make this connection, because yes, we have this new record coming out called Deep Sea Vents. I made it with my friends, the great New York Chamber Ensemble, Y Music, and we call ourselves BRIM, B-R-H, my initials, and Y-M, theirs. And it is definitely coming from a modern classical bent, and there are a couple of songs on there, two out of ten, that will definitely bend the pop ear on a harmonic level. Again, it's actually fairly atonal, dealing in what Leonard Bernstein called atonality. We call it. I've always pronounced it atonal, but I'll go with Lenny on this one. Atonality. I guess there is a clear line drawn from Paprika Plains to our new record, Deep Sea Vents, in the sense that I've always been interested in this. That was a song in the pop world, pop quote unquote, because Joni was really moving away from that at the time. That signals some of the moves that I've made in the last several years, when I've pissed off lots of my old-time fans who just can't stand what I do now. But I can't. That's not why I make it for me. I'm always trying to evolve and grow and look for new inspiration from Like a Rolling Stone to Paprika Plains and on and on.
Well, I think of a quote from I read about you probably when you were initially blowing up in the 80s I don't have the full story here, but it was something along the lines of you had been trying to, you know, quote unquote, make it in the music biz, playing what you thought other people wanted to hear. And you were about to throw in the towel and you decided to make, you know, the record that ended up, you know, becoming your big moment to introduce you to the world. It was just because you made something you wanted to make. So that stands to reason that you're still kind of that mindset. Am I getting that right? That kind of story?
Yeah, that's pretty much right. The least commercial demo tape I ever made is the one that got me signed by RCA Records, signed by the great ex-Zombies rhythm guitar player, the great British man Paul Atkinson, signed me to RCA in April of 1985. So that's 39 years ago. Yes, so right. It was the most original sound that I had made, though. It was the I've played it for my brothers before. I played it for other people, and they said, "Wow, for the first time, we really hear you unencumbered." I made it just by myself with a drum machine. I was playing all the instruments, just the old Paul McCartney first solo album, one man show idea.
Beyond Video is a volunteer-run video library in Baltimore. Basically, an old-school video rental store reimagined with a 21st-century nonprofit twist. Beyond offers nearly 30,000 titles from every region, era, and genre of cinema on DVD, Blu-ray, and VHS, a collection created by crowdsourcing disc donations from movie lovers like you. With no rental fees or late fees, members get unlimited rentals from their collection for a small monthly donation. Find out more about joining or donating at beyondvideo.org. Or when in Baltimore, visit Beyond at 2545 North Howard Street. And for a limited time, new members who mention Essential Tremors when signing up will get an extra month for free. What do Tony Conrad, Reese Chatham, Captain Beefheart, and Faust have in common? Each have legendary recordings on the table of the Elements record label. Long out of print, these and other records from the label are available again with the Table of the Elements Discovery Box, available only at withinthings.com. Within Things Curiosity Shop has partnered with the label to help continue their legacy of connecting sound with listeners since 1993. Visit withinthings.com and search Table of the Elements to learn more. The final piece of music Hornsby chose as being crucial to him was "I'm a Youth Inclined to Ramble" by Paul Brady.
I am a youth that's inclined to ramble to some foreign country I mean to steer. I am loath to part from me friends and comrades and my dear sweetheart whom I love dear. But there's one of the...
Yeah, so then we'll fast forward to the late 80s. Although the record was released in 78, I wasn't made aware of this record until about 88, 89, when my new friend at the time, Sean Colvin, turned me on to the amazing Paul Brady traditional Irish record, Welcome Here, Crying Stranger. And I get chills thinking about that record, just talking about it. It still crushes me when I hear it. And it crushes everybody I ever played for. I had Chaka Khan in here. We wrote a song together for Spike Lee's film Clockers in 95. So she was here with me. She came to Williamsburg, and we're in the studio where I'm sitting now. And for some reason, I decided to play her this Paul Brady record. And, oh, it just dropped her. She was so moved by it because it's so soulful and so deep. So Paul Brady's just the whole record. But I guess I could pick the song "The Lakes of Pontchartrain." Although I pick a later version that's not on "Welcome Here, Kind Stranger." It's still just Brady and his guitar and some sort of Julian pipes or however you say that word, penny whistles, that sort of thing. But Lakes of Pontchartrain, but so many. I Am a Youth Inclined to Ramble. There's one I could pick. That's the name of the song. I am a youth inclined to ramble. It's really something special. So Paul Brady, Welcome Here, Kind Stranger.
Did you have an interest in traditional folk musics before that, or especially of the Irish or Scots variety?
Oh, absolutely. I was a folky back in those early Bob Dylan days. First concert I ever saw was at the William and Mary football stadium, Peter, Paul, and Mary. Not that I was so into them, but so I was really, I've always had a deep love for traditional American music of all stripes. And I'm going to throw in a fourth here because I don't want to shortchange the amazing black music history of our country. And so a seminal record for me again, maybe sort of early 70s, Muddy Waters, live at Mr. Kelly's. Blow My Baby Back to Me. It's so incredibly mm-hmm. soulful mm-hmm. and rich, and just what a phraser, what a singer. It just sprung from Zeus, mm-hmm. that man, Muddy mm-hmm. Waters. And so let me just throw that and try to slip a fourth one in there because it was very influential to me.
We'll allow it this one time. We'll let it slide. I will ask you this. You play on the new single, you play sitar. So it makes me think about, you know, your origins. You're talking, Peter, Paul, and Mary didn't have sitar, but in that era, that was becoming a thing, you know, obviously.
Painted Black
and the Beatles, yep. and everything else is there. I mean, again, I know there's not this thing where you consciously wake up one morning and go, they played sitar on this song in 1965. I think I will do that. But do you think there's any sort of unconscious, you know, something about the lineage that led to you playing sitar on this song?
Well, we lived a block away from the William & Mary Performing Arts Center. It was called Phi Beta Kappa Hall. Glenn Close performed in there when she was a student at William & Mary. She was, the belle of the ball, the star of the show. Mm-hmm. So my mom would drag us to, you know, the Navy Choir concert or you know, Gilbert and Sullivan, the Mikado, stuff that we had to be dragged. Mm-hmm. We were not excited to go. But Ravi Shankar came with Ala Raka and Kamala Chakravarti, the Ravi Shankar trio. And so we were mad for this because, you know, the Beatles were into all that. And so I just can't help but remember that moment and maybe thanking my mom belatedly, you know, years later for dragging us to that one. But again, we didn't have to be dragged to that one because we had that pop culture mm-hmm, connection. Mm-hmm. We knew of that connection with Bobby and George Harrison mostly. So yeah, I don't know. I've just always liked the sound. This I cry like a baby. That's another electric sitar moment in our youth. Whatever the name of that song is, and so of course, Paint It Black again. So like, it's just a sound I've always liked. This is electric sitar, mind you. I'm not playing the real sitar. That's a complete bear to play technically.
Well, just the electric tuning alone, right?
Yes, exactly, right. I don't know enough about it to comment from an informed position.
Right, same here, but I've heard tell, yes.
Yes, that's right. But the electric sitar is good enough. It's good enough for Brian Jones. It's good enough for me.
And the bees hummed around the sunny opening flower. But when you're crossing the western ocean, the maid that loved you, you'll ne'er mind above.
This has been Essential Tremors. Essential Tremors is produced by me, Matt Byers, and Lee Gardner. Essential Tremors is distributed by WYPR Baltimore. For more information about Essential Tremors, go to essentialpodcast.com. Thanks for listening.
Oh, Mary dear, I don't dissemble. For to all other fair maids I'll prove untrue. And if you think that...